So I want to start the meeting. Welcome everybody to the September 20th legislative meeting. Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? Thank you. We have the roll call, members.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Mr. McKenna?
Here.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Ms. Robertson has asked to be excused. Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you, Kathy. So we do not have any presentations of proclamation, petitions, communication, or notices, but we do have an executive session this evening. The executive session will be referring to real estate negotiations and labor negotiations. And now I want to open it up to the privilege of the floor. I don't know if I have not gotten any blue cards. So I will move to municipal officials. And I actually do have one notification. We did not, or the two city representatives were not able to come this evening, so they sent me an email. They wanted to give us all an update because they couldn't be physically present. So I will let you all know what they said, and it's easier for me to read them. There were four quick updates. The first one is that the IURA ranked the Green Street Garage proposal on a number of factors, such as community benefits and financial viability, and Vecino's 2009 affordable or 209 affordable unit proposal ranked highest, followed distantly by Vism and Harold's Holdings and Peak, which was last. The next meeting on the subject will be a public hearing at the City Hall at 8:30 a.m. on Thursday, September 27th. Also, Council authorized the sale of some property on South Cayuga Street to INHS for the construction of affordable owner-occupied housing. Some of you might be or might recall the first phase of the comprehensive plan where they did the reevaluation of the zoning of the waterfront. They are systematically going through the entire city and evaluating the zoning to more closely align with the comprehensive plan. And they are currently doing Southside Neighborhood. It's open right now. They just had a presentation, and you can look for the article about the presentation. They're open for public comment, and I think that alludes to it. That's in the Ithaca Voice, and it has a link to the full plan, and then you can make comments to the city. The Diocese of Rochester put out an RFP for redeveloping the Immaculate Conception School site, and Council passed a resolution encouraging affordable housing and allowing GIAC to use the existing gymnasium. So that would be with Leslin. And basically, it's a signal to developers that if they pursue a PUD, PUD, those attributes are what Council will want to see as part of that proposal. So those are all of the updates from the city. And I probably can't answer any questions, but if anybody has some, I can always pass them on. Are there any other municipal officials? I don't think I see any. So opening up to the privilege of the floor to the legislature. Mike.
There's a saying that says justice delayed is justice denied. And one of the problems we have in Tompkins County is putting people through the justice system rapidly. And one of the reasons for that is because we do not have enough judges. And I'm talking about county judges who handle most of the criminal work for the county, felony and above. And we have two county judges, and they also act as family court judges. They also act as judges of the surrogates court. So they have three hats each. There's a lot of work in Tompkins County. We have over 100,000 people. Some of our counties in New York have more judges than we do. For example, Chemung, which has a lower population than we do. We have been moving toward trying to have different kinds of courts. Most recently, we want to have a mental health court. We'd really like to have a DWI section of the county court or the Supreme Court so that we could move and have equal justice among the courts for those DWI offenders. We need to press our county, or rather our state representatives and the governor, to allocate another county judge for Tompkins County. That will mean, of course, having judges' chambers, and they aren't inexpensive, but they are paid for by the state, so the money has to be allocated. Last year, toward the end of the year, the state Senate actually passed legislation that would have authorized us to have a third county court judge. It didn't get through the assembly. There's always fights about judges, upstate and downstate, Democratic versus Republican, those kinds of things. But our judge in Tompkins County will help us reduce the number of people in our jail, and that's what we need to do. So we need to redouble our efforts to get the state to make that change.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Henry?
Yes. There's as part of Welcoming America's National Week, Ithaca Welcomes Refugees is holding a film screening of the movie Human Flow at Cinépolis tonight at 7 p.m. So I can't go, but other people watching this can go. Also, I'd like to announce that the Ithaca Dog Fest is also this weekend on September 22nd at Freeman Marine Park on Sunday. Oh, sorry, on the 22nd. There's a First Peoples Festival on Saturday, on 9/29 at DeWitt Park from 11:30 to 5:30. And the Tommy Plane will be seen also on September 29th at the airport from 2 to 5. And also, this is Cardinals homecoming this Saturday, so go Big Red.
Thank you, Henry. Well, if no one else has any announcements, I'll just make two quick ones. This month is Hunger Awareness Month, so just something to keep in mind. A few of us legislators went on a tour on Tuesday morning. We started out at TC3, and they showed us their pantry that they've been expanding. They broke through a wall, doubled the size. They have toiletries, and they have food, and it is run partially by some of the students there. It is extremely impressive. They're working very hard to destigmatize the use of the pantries because there's a high association between, as many people know, educational attainment and ability to succeed in education and hunger. So that was very impressive. And then we went to the Enfield pantry. As many of you know, they've struggled. They were closed for, I think, 27 days with some structural issues. And with $23,000 raised from the community, they were able to address those structural deficiencies and reopen their doors. And we as legislators were able to help out, volunteer for an hour or two. And it was some of the others could speak to it as well, but it was a very eye-opening and heartwarming experience. There are a lot of people that use that facility, and it is absolutely necessary for them to have food for the month. We ended at Titus Towers with a meal from Meals on Wheels, which is something that the legislature funds. And the outpouring of love for the work that they do, and Jessica Goza, who's the new director, was free-flowing, shall we say. And the other announcement that I would make is that I highly encourage everybody on Sunday afternoon to come down to Fall Creek, where we will be having Porch Fest, which is bands that stand on porches and play music. Every hour there'll be about 20, 25 different bands. It has taken off. It started in Ithaca, and it has taken off all around the world, inspired by a few creative, innovative people here in Ithaca. So that is Sunday the 23rd in the afternoon in Fall Creek area. So with that, I will move on to a special topic presentation. We do have a special topic presentation this evening, and I think we do have to drop... So we have a presentation from the director of DSS, Kit Kephart. And this is referring to the new contract for the homeless shelter. And I'll let her, Kit, take it away once they come down.
Thank you. You're lucky Tom stopped me earlier. You would have gotten this twice, or most of you in the other committee. We presented this topic at Health and Human Services this past week, and we were asked to provide some supplemental information and to provide this for the full legislature. With me is Dina Bodner, Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Social Services, and Tom Herden, our Director of Administrative Services. We released an RFP for homeless shelter services on July 9th. We held a pre-bid conference. This is just to kind of give people a sense of where we've been at. Pre-bid conference on July 25th, which was attended by about 20 people. We were pleased with the attendance. And there were about 15 previously submitted questions that we provided answers to, as well as about 15 more asked and answered during the pre-bid conference. And then the question and answers were posted on the RFP website within about 5 days. There were about 19 additional questions that were submitted by the August 1st deadline prior to us going into that pre-bid conference. And then the deadline that we were waiting for submittals from the RFP was August 17th. Our requirements were really to provide a clean, safe emergency shelter for homeless people who are either have gone through the eligibility process at DSS, or to look at those folks that might need sheltering on an emergency basis, an immediate basis, that their eligibility has not yet been determined. And then also to find a provider that could operate a daytime drop-in center. So in our community, that's been called the Friendship Center for homeless people, offering outreach, prevention, hospitality, and then really trying to engage folks and connect them to DSS and other human service agencies as might be helpful to them. We really looked at does the proposal satisfy the specified issues identified in the RFP and anything that we clarified through the pre-bid conference. It reflected a focus on providing a safe, efficient, and pleasant environment for supervision of guests at the shelter. And we were looking for proposals that would reflect a commitment to data-driven decision-making. We looked at does the respondent demonstrate a history of successfully serving homeless folks in a residential setting and demonstrate a history of successfully serving homeless people in a walk-in environment. Our strong preferences as we looked at the submissions that we received were for DSS to continue to determine eligibility for the emergency shelter. We continued to plan to provide case management and rehousing services for emergency shelter clients. We really were looking at those 15 single-room occupancy units, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a minute, as an important community resource and hopes that they would be maintained as a part of any proposals.
I just wanted to say those strong preferences were expressed as part of the RFP, not something that we were layering on afterward.
So there were three proposals that we received. Two were submitted by faith-based organizations, and the third by a non-denominational, not-for-profit. I should say that when we presented this at Health and Human Services, we actually believe that St. John's Community Services was also a faith-based organization. We've clarified that. They are actually a not-for-profit. All responses proposed to continue using that same building, as we had talked about a few minutes ago, for the shelter and the drop-in center. And all proposals were significantly more expensive, unfortunately, than our agreements with the current provider. Two proposals featured the conversion of all or a significant number of those single-room occupancy units that are located within the shelter location. So within the shelter location, there are 15 single-room occupancies, so they are places where people are paying rent, usually rent that they are it's an extremely low rent. They're paying rent, and they can reside in that building. We had a strong preference that those single-room occupancies be maintained. We have a really significant housing shortage, especially for that extremely low-income population, and losing those was a huge concern. And so those respondents that were that included the conversion of those single-room occupancies into shelter space were asked if they'd be willing to amend those proposals to maintain the SRO units. One agreed to do that. The other declined. One proposal also included shelter staff to provide case management or rehousing services, and that respondent was asked if they'd be willing to amend their proposal to eliminate that duplication, because that is something that DSS was planning on continuing to provide, and they agreed to do that. At this point, we've inserted the additional information that we were asked to add. Dina's going to talk a little bit about that.
So during the Health and Human Service Committee meeting, there was a request to see more information regarding the number of persons in the shelter that are approved by DSS, the number of motel placements, and how Code Blue falls into this. So THA stands for Temporary Housing Assistance. So that's the funding that DSS is able to pay for eligible clients. So this chart shows the numbers of persons covered in the past 12-month period for persons approved for THA that were housed in the emergency shelter itself, in motel rooms, and then cold blue is those who were housed under the governor's inclement weather legislation during the winter months. So you can see for the temporary shelter, there is some fluctuation during the year with the average number of persons housed who are eligible for DSS THA at 7.83. The motels have some fluctuation during the year with the average number of 20.47. And then the code blue, so that those are persons, they are sometimes placed in motel or shelter depending on a number of factors. So we didn't break those out. All those costs are covered completely by the state under that legislation. And so the average number of persons per night was 16.4. So this shows the numbers for the past year. And then to put this in context, the next slide shows the total number of bed nights. So this would be across all motels, shelter, bed nights per year going back about 28 years. And what you can see is that there can be significant fluctuations in the total number of bed nights over time. So you can see that between 1997 and 2006, they fell by one-third the next year, and then they gradually declined back to 1997 levels over 6 years, and then increased again by 169% in 2014. So, and these fluctuations are related to a number of factors that occur during time, during these time periods. So this range of sometimes sudden change and variability in the number of persons needing emergency shelter is what makes it really difficult for us to determine what the right size of an emergency shelter could be. Because next year, things could change again, funding could come through for permanent housing, and the shelter numbers could drop again. Or they might stay at the same levels because of the current housing shortage and limited funding. So this is kind of the difficult situation that we're in terms of making decisions around the shelter. And so with that context in mind, Tom will go back and discuss more about the three proposals in our decision-making in relationship to this.
So this slide, because we were asked to make a briefer presentation with a little more information, this slide consolidates what I think were three slides in our presentation last week and adds some information that we were asked to add. In our initial presentation, we removed from the presentation both the motel costs because we removed both the motel costs and startup costs for two reasons. We were focused on ongoing operating costs, not just the first startup cost. The reason we took the motels out of the equation was because we feel there is great variability, great elasticity in that need. And we wanted to focus on what the cost was that the county would be committing to by committing to any of the specific proposals. But it was pointed out, I believe by Ann, quite rightly, that the motel costs have an impact on the bottom line, a different impact on the bottom line than what we were showing. So we were asked to include that. So very briefly, this slide shows I do apologize. For some reason, on the screen that you're seeing, that there's a heading missing above each of those columns. So I'll have to tell you that proposal that's furthest, the column that's furthest to the left, that starts with the halftime director, let me see here. So actually, I'm very sorry. There seems to be several lines missing from the top of this. If you would give me a moment, I'll see if I can resize that. I guess not. Sorry, I do apologize. So the first column is reflecting the Catholic Charities proposal. The middle column is reflecting St. John's proposal, and the third column is reflecting the Salvation Army proposal. The lines that are missing at the very top indicate in the first line how many SRO units were reflected in the proposal. Both Catholic Charities and St. John's proposals retained the SRO units, the 15 SRO units that Kit mentioned earlier. Salvation Army proposed to convert all 15 of those units to additional shelter beds. So the second line that unfortunately you can't see listed or provided the total number then of shelter beds that were being proposed. So for the case of Catholic Charities and St. John's, the size of the shelter that they were proposing had 12 units. And for Salvation Army, because they were proposing to add the SRO units, they would have 27 beds in the shelter. So the second part that you are seeing a part of listed the titles and numbers of staff in those titles that were contained in these proposals. And unfortunately, there are three lines that you can't see for Catholic Charities. They are a halftime director for the shelter, a 80% FTE for a residence manager, and a 30% FTE, full-time equivalent, for a service navigator. In the St. John's column, unfortunately, we are missing two lines, 70% of a director position and 1.4 full-time equivalents in supervisor positions. rest of the slide appears to be intact. So below the FTE counts, we are showing the total shelter operating budget. So that's for the shelter itself and for staff. We are including below that a projected cost for motel placements. And for the purposes of this presentation, we used the historical figures from the past 12 months, which showed that on average during that period, we had 20 persons lodging in motels on average each night. So on that line, we multiplied 20 guests times $85 per night times 365 days, and the result of that calculation appears in that line for both Catholic Charities and St. John's. For Salvation Army, that figure is reduced by the additional 15 beds in the shelter that they would have available each night under their proposal. So their motel cost is going down because their shelter cost is going up. The revenue line represents revenues that the three respondents thought they could secure. The Catholic Charities figure, that $72,000, represents rental income that they were expecting from those SRO units. St. John's proposal included not quite $113,000 in revenue. That also included the rental income from SROs, as well as funding from a couple of other sources. Excuse me a moment. So the next line then summarizes the total of the shelter operating costs plus motel costs minus revenue should result in the total contract cost, the contract that we would be executing for the operation of the shelter itself. The second section is laid out similarly. You have a list of titles and FTEs, the number of FTEs then that are being proposed to staff the drop-in center. And in order to conserve space, we've left out the revenue that was reflected in the proposals and just showed the net contract amount that the three respondents were proposing. So $79,000 for Catholic Charities, $127,000 for St. John's, and $191,000 for Salvation Army. At the bottom of the slide, we're showing the total FTEs across both programs for each of the respondents, the amount of startup costs that were reflected in their proposals, the combined gross costs of both the shelter contract and the drop-in center contract. And then the last two lines show in the initial 12 months of these contracts what the local cost would be. And then the final line, what the local cost would be from year two going forward. So it's basically the same, except it's reduced by the amount of the startup costs that were proposed. If we use the same assumptions that are reflected in this slide, if we applied the same assumptions regarding motel utilization to the most... Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. The total shelter contract cost does not include subtraction of the revenue?
It should have. If it doesn't, that's an error.
Okay.
And it looks like you're right. It does not. It is an error.
Sorry.
No, thank you. If we applied the same assumptions regarding the motel costs to the most recent contracts that we have had with our current provider, the net local cost for the services for these two contracts would have been $637,000. So these, working from left to right, these three proposals are reflecting additional local costs of $270,000, $385,000, and $200,000, respectively. Those figures will be a bit lower when we correct the formula that was just observed. We inadvertently left out those revenues, so I apologize.
Just a point of clarification. So which one is the St. John's?
St. John's is the middle proposal, the most expensive proposal. Catholic Charities is on the left. Salvation Army is on the right.
So I guess I'm curious why we would go with the highest bid.
That's the next slide.
So as we considered the three proposals, there were a number of things that kind of drove our decision. One of the top things was converting the SROs to shelter units would leave us as a community with 15 fewer long-term low-income housing options, really at a time when we need many more low-income housing options. So that was something that we really didn't want to consider. We don't believe that the current level of need for emergency shelter will be sustained indefinitely. And if those bed nights decline, even though a larger shelter sounds sometimes like it may be the answer, the problem there is that we will end up seeing a much higher bed night, a significantly higher bed night for a larger shelter. And potentially we're in a situation where we have empty shelter beds and we're having to pay for those. We don't have a way to cover that cost.
So you're saying the cost per bed increases with the greater number of beds that are empty?
That's correct.
And if I can intercede, as recently as last year, in the late spring of last year, the average number of persons that we had in the motel in, let me just see here, March, April, and May, the average number of persons, I said in motel, I apologize, the average number of persons in the shelter in March, April, and May were 6.2, 5.2, and 7.3. There's a very large increase in the middle of last year.
I guess the question is, whenever the average number is so low in the shelters during those months, why are we also seeing an increase in our motel stays? Wouldn't you obviously put the people that are in the motels in the shelter first?
Ordinarily, yes. And thank you for asking. This is something we covered last week, but we haven't said it yet tonight. So I believe that an event happened last year around this time that was a fire. Am I right? In a trailer park?
No, it was in an apartment complex.
Okay.
Yep.
And it is the case that when we when persons present who are homeless and they are a family unit, we do not house them in the shelter. Also, when persons present who are homeless who have characteristics that would make them less desirable to house in a shelter setting, for example, persons who are registered sex offenders and so forth, we also generally do not place them in the shelter. So sometimes there is capacity in the shelter, but the nature of the persons who are presenting makes it desirable to put them in a motel setting instead.
Any other questions before they go on?
Great. Okay. So if a large shelter need is sustained over time, we talked a little bit ago about St. John's has the plan of looking at alternate site options, trying to really evaluate that and look at what's possible. And then the other reason why we have really looked at St. John's as a preferred option is because their higher level of staffing and really specifically about supervision within the shelter, we feel will provide improved quality service, especially around client safety, and really position us to be responsive when OTDA releases those new requirements that we anticipate around homeless outreach and engagement. One of the parts of St. John's proposal is to really have a responsible supervisor on each shift and to have somebody who is providing that kind of oversight to really manage incidents that come up. As you know, right now, the struggles that we have seen over the last number of years around things like opioid addiction, increased mental health challenges, people that are sometimes housed in the homeless shelter that have real challenges that need support, direction, referral, and sometimes intervention around emergencies, we really feel like there's a real increased need from what has existed around that. So that's a lot of the reason why we are supporting the St. John's proposal. Oops, just not something out of place yet. So that's the end of our presentation.
Any questions? Deborah?
Yeah, thank you for all of this. I'm really glad I don't have your job. So I assume we're paying rent for the facility that we're using. No?
We're not. That's part of what the provider does.
Correct. Okay. So query whether going forward we ought to think about, I mean, how much of this amount is rent?
Sorry, say again?
How much of these of the contract is rent? How much rent does the provider pay to this piece of property that doesn't make any improvements?
It's around $100,000. It's something over that, but it's around $100,000
for the year.
Yep.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Rich?
If you could go back to the slide with the numbers on it. I was trying to figure out, if you take the revenue back out, it looks like the middle proposal is relatively close to the other two. Am I reading that right?
You mean if we counted it like I meant to?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So, okay. So they're fairly comparable then.
So just in summary, what I'm understanding from this is that you have a higher number of FTEs, a more comprehensive programming. You have the SRO rooms and a comparable price tag for the St. John's compared to the other ones, which is why you chose St. John's. Is that correct in summary?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Yeah, Jason.
I'd just add that probably by the next EBC meeting, we'll have some final numbers, or try to have some final numbers as what this impact will be on the proposed budget, so you can take that into consideration, because this will have to be an amendment to the recommended budget. So by that time, we should have at least a good understanding at the very latest, the October 1st meeting. So we'll refine this to know what that recommended budget impact will be.
So that we're not crazy out of order, we did just pass a resolution in special committee, although it has not been added yet to the agenda. It might be appropriate to do that now. So I'm going to ask Shauna to move this first to be added to the agenda.
Yes, I would like to add resolution number ID 8119. Appropriation from contingent fund and authorization to execute contracts for homeless services, Department of Social Services.
Version A. Do I have a second? Mike? Great. So all in favor of moving this on the agenda this evening? That is unanimous. 14. So, Shauna, can I have you move this then?
Yes, I would like to move.
13.
Yes, correct. Thank you. 13.
I would like to move resolution number 8119.
Can I have a second? Mike again. Kit, would you like to talk a bit about this resolution so that we understand what this is for?
Sure. So this resolution is about startup funds for the new provider. I think there's been a list distributed now that includes a list that's, I think the total is 89,250. This first proposal is, or this first resolution, sorry, is kind of breaking that list for a group of items that are related to kind of health and safety.
Kit, I'm going to stop you for just one moment. Does everybody have a copy of this priority list? So there's very specific items that would be addressed.
I've just made copies. So anyone who doesn't have one, just raise your hands.
Okay. Rich, you needed a copy as well, correct?
Amanda shared hers.
Okay. So this is the priority list that they identified for issues that need to be addressed with respect to capital and initial investments. Okay, please.
So these are startup costs for a new provider. This list has been identified by St. John's Community Services. It's a list that we went through and tried to really look at what were the items that were health and safety or required by OTDA for inspections. And that top part of the list that goes down to the 62250 are things that were identified to make the shelter safe, secure, make sure that we're passing inspections. We are supporting, in fact, the whole list, but that top part are really considered elemental or essential components.
So I just want to clarify again. Deborah, I think he printed out the wrong document. He's about to print it out again for you. So don't waste your time anymore on that one. And again, this is version A. There's a version A and there's a version B. The one that we brought onto the agenda is version A. And they have different totals. Mike?
There were a couple of revisions in both committees, just so everyone knows. The last bottom of the last resolved figure is $62,250. And also we added at the end of that resolve that no expenses are to be paid without approval of the county administrator.
Thank you, Mike. Dan?
So, see, we were all just presented with this information recently, so it's hard to know. Everything had to move very fast in this whole project, I understand, so it's hard to know all the details. Version B of this resolution includes an additional $27,000 to include some additional items that would be done to the facility. So I'm going to move to substitute version B. So to include that additional amount, which would bring it to a total of $89,250.
Is that friendly? No.
I don't think
Do we have a second? Leslin? Do we want to discuss that one, Dan? Do you want to make a pitch?
I've said
on
everything
that?
I need to say.
Okay. Mike Lane?
Dan, would that include the same language about the county administrator?
Yes. Thank you.
I'll add one thing then to Dan's statement that was made during the committee. I appreciated the extra information, and it was a question, I think, Dan, that you asked, what would be the impact of doing a two-phase? Once the initial startup improvements are made, they'll move in. If these are done after that, that can be logistically more difficult. I understand that was the reason that some people felt it important to get all the work done in the beginning before it went into active use by the new organization. So just make that point.
There's another component of this that I should probably outline that I'm not remembering that I didn't say in this meeting, which is that we have contacted OTDA and talked to them about whether or not there are potentially funds for shelter improvements or repairs, and there is a fund. We've had kind of a very short window because we just got started that negotiating process from last week, but we've contacted them. They've let us know that there is a fund, that it is a grant process, and it goes up to $100,000. The provider, the selected provider, has to apply for that. So right now, that money has not been yet applied for, and we don't have a guarantee, but I think it is probably, there's probably a good chance that we would see some of this money back from a grant process like that through OTDA, although there's no guarantee, but I'm very hopeful about that.
Okay. Anne?
Can you please explain what OTDA means?
Yes, I'm sorry. The Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. So when we talk about things like temporary housing assistance, the eligibility process that we go through to determine that somebody qualifies for a shelter, a bed in the shelter, or a hotel bed, If they are a THA client, so cold weather, code blue funding is separate from that. But the provider of all of those funds is the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance. That's the state office that that oversees those programs.
Deborah?
Just one more question before we vote on this. What are safety net shelter placements?
In New York State, there are two broad categories of ongoing public assistance cases. One of them is the state's administration of the federal program known as temporary assistance. TANF is the acronym that you used to refer to that funding. The second is a New York State-only program that is similar in almost all ways to the TANF program. The difference is that the persons who are in receipt of safety net benefits do not qualify for federal benefits. The federal benefits have a 5-year lifetime limit, and there are also other requirements on receiving federal assistance. So it's basically New York State's version of temporary assistance.
So this is like the old ADC HR?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
And for those who don't know, HR was the precursor of what has been called safety net for quite some time, and that HR stood for home relief. ADC was aid to dependent children.
Oh, I thought we were playing the alphabet game.
No,
we're working on it.
It's just that I worked for social services in like the 70s. So,
so can I have one last question about that grant that you were referring to? Can it be applied to retroactively?
I don't know that. I doubt it. Do you know, have more information?
So looking at the application, you're putting in the things that you're looking for to fund. And so I think it's within the realm of possibility that even if it's paid for upfront, it would be reimbursed.
Okay, so that is a possibility then.
I definitely think it is. And knowing, so it's through an office at OTDA that does the inspections, and we can ask those questions and get that information probably pretty quickly.
And that actually inspired one other question, just so everybody knows why this has gone so quickly. What's the timeline that you're working on for all of this?
So the rescue mission is looking to discontinue operations at the end of October, and so the start date that St. John's would completely take over operations is November 1st, and then looking for an overlap period here in October.
And would they need to shut it down for a period of time to do these renovations? Okay, they would do them while it was still in active use. Deborah, and then Shauna.
So if we're not sure that we can get this grant funding if we've already done the repairs, wouldn't it be prudent to hold off on doing the repairs until we know for sure one way or another whether repairs qualify, or our repairs, if they're done before the grant's given, would qualify for reimbursement?
I mean, we can get that clarified. I can't give you an answer now. I mean, some of the things on the top of the list probably don't even qualify as repairs. The security cameras, the alarm system staffing, that stuff is not going to be covered by the grant. Some of the items at the bottom, like the painting, replacing doors, furniture replacement, carpet repairs, those would fall under the grant, but some of the other costs are more considered startup, and so those we would still have to cover those.
So just to follow up, the things on the bottom of the list are the additional things that would be covered by Mr. Klein's proposed amendment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, I think we may have failed to say during this meeting. The list was prioritized by the respondent, and we organized it into those two sets because in their initial proposal, the respondent had said that they thought that they would require about $55,000 for startup. When they actually provided us with the list, it expanded beyond that. So that's why we we took their prioritization, but we separated into two groups.
Shauna, and then Henry.
Ideally, it would have been nice to have this information a little bit before, you know, it at least given us a day to look it over. I think that would have been helpful. I also think what would have been nice would have been to have an invoice and have a clear estimate, because I feel like many of these line items are double and triple, perhaps what we'll see the numbers, what I'm hoping we'll see the numbers come in at. I do feel comfortable going with a larger amount with the caveat that Jason will be approving these purchases. So.
Henry?
Did St. John's, had you talked to them about applying for that grant? Have they done it before?
No, St. John's has not done that before, and we have just recently learned about that potential. We reached out to OTDA because we were looking at these figures and trying to figure out what resources we and they might have to be able to rely on. So it's a grant process in the sense that you're applying to the Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance and getting their approval for that money. It's not a competitive grant. They're looking to determine whether or not the expenses that you're talking about qualify within what they're doing around shelter inspections and providing good shelter services. So they're just looking to have an evaluation process to determine whether or not those costs are reasonable.
I'll also say, looking at the application, there's a section where we as DSS would provide information as a supporting organization, because OTDA is always looking to make sure that their shelter providers have a good relationship and are working with their, because that's not true in every district, that you have some shelter providers who are kind of working a little bit independently and not always directly connected. So I would say that's one thing in our favor here.
Also, for the director salary and the supervisor salary, why is it only 1 month and 2 weeks?
So those are in this startup money, because obviously you have to actually get things up and running. Right. So you have to actually hire that director and the supervisor. They were looking at hiring the director for a month, getting some policy and procedures in place, then getting a supervisor 2 weeks in advance, so that not only can they begin to program plan, but they can also begin the process of interviewing and hiring staff. Because they have to be ready to go. This isn't one of those situations where you're starting a business, and if the business doesn't provide those services for a month upon startup, it's no big deal. These are, you know, human beings in a homeless shelter, so we have to have things ready to go from November 1st.
Wouldn't you need 2 months of funding to cover them for November and December?
Those costs are reflected. Yeah, so the answer is yes. Those costs are reflected in the resolution before you, but they are not part of startup costs. The shelter would be operating starting in November. And so the costs from November 1st forward will be paid for through the per diem rates that we pay for stays in the shelter. So that's separate from the startup costs that we're paying in advance of the agency taking over the shelter operation.
Shauna?
I think also it would be important for us to have a very candid conversation with St. John's, in that this is a one-time offering, and that from here on out they will be responsible for the operation of this building as well as the maintenance. And whether the landlord handles these or they handle these, that would really be their responsibility.
I believe that that is understood. We will make that 100% clear, but I think that that is understood, and that is the nature of their thinking about this, is that it is a one-time thing.
So with the one-time, we will hold that. They will apply for the grant and get it directly, and that will reduce what they will need from us, I'm assuming, then, or that will reimburse. I'm assuming it's not a fast turnaround with that grant.
We don't know, because we haven't been through this before. So we will need to front them whatever is the sum that you folks agree for the startup costs. But we will include in our contract language that whatever part of those costs are conveyed to them through that state grant, that the county will be refunded that amount.
There's definitely a lot of unknowns.
Yes.
A lot of pieces hanging, which I think is making it, a little uncomfortable. And the only reason we absolutely have to move forward is because we absolutely need a shelter and that cannot lose service. I think it's very critical, though, that we stay in close connection, maybe communicating with Jason. Jason can keep us up to date about what's going on, because I think it's important that we see where the strings are tied together. Henry.
The organization, the OTDA, whatever, how often do they inspect the shelters?
So they come and inspect annually, and then we're also required to do a second inspection annually. So the shelter gets inspected twice a year.
So the shelter had been inspected with all these items?
So they've been in, they were inspected the past 2 years is when this started. And some of these items, so like the security cameras, why that was not a requirement early on with OTDA, that was something they were looking for, the carpets. So if they come in next year and some of these things maybe aren't taken care of, we have to do a corrective action plan and show them that we've actually had to, previous shelter rescue mission had to replace some furniture. So there are things that that the shelter ends up having to take care of after an inspection. Did I answer your question?
Yes, you did.
Okay. I'm going to bring Jason. We've asked you to keep us up to date moving forward on all of this, maybe in your weekly reports or maybe in these presentations. But did you have anything else to add? Because you've been a part of this whole process.
Sure. I think we all share the frustration with the timeliness or the lack of time, just due to the time constraints with the process in general. So I think that's not we're all sharing that frustration. I know Kit, Tom, and I've had those discussions. As we've talked through it, I think, one of the things we all want to happen is we want this provider to succeed. We want them to be successful, to do a very good job, to provide the services that we want to our residents in our community, our citizens in our community. So I think from that perspective, we have talked about the larger amount in version B of this resolution because it provides the provider a good footing to step off from for the value that we think we're going to get with it. The other nice part about this from the provider, while the provider is new, there's familiarity with the leadership, and I think that's a real good element of this vendor or this provider. From that perspective, that's been our discussions internally, wanting to see the provider get off on the right foot, have the most success, and our support behind them. And by all means, I'm continuing to be in communication with them, I think, on a monthly basis to see how the process is going. So that's, I think, part of, I know the staff, I think our recommendation internally would have been the larger amount to see them get off on the right foot.
So then you're good with giving us regular report outs when?
Absolutely.
Okay, for the next couple months. That would be wonderful.
So
if there aren't any more questions, I would like to have a vote on the amendment to the resolution to change this from version A to version B. All in favor? One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, 10. All opposed? Okay, 3 opposed. That passes. So this goes back to the main vote with the amended version. Does anybody else have any questions? And this requires a short roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Aye.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
Any opposed? That passes. Thank you so much for the presentation. We wish them good luck and look forward to the reports.
Thank you.
Thank you for your support.
So I do not have a chair's report, but I do have chair's appointments. The Workforce Development Board, we have Heather McDaniels, Economic Development Representative. Her term expires on June 30th, 2021. Bridget Nugent, the Youth Services Organization Representative, term expires June 30th, 2020. Anorinthia Montague, Higher Education Representative, and her term expires on June 30th, 2021. So I will move to the County Administrator's report.
Thank you. One thing to report, and I briefed GO the other day on it. In recent discussions, everyone's familiar with the Healthcare Consortium and the successes it's had in recent years, being the only one in the state. And it has seen some growth in the recent years, and it's expected to see some growth in future years. I think you said you had something like 12? 12 new municipalities potentially coming into the consortium, one of them being another county, an adjacent county. So in that, I've had some discussions with Don Barber about, Rick and I have been part of those discussions, about them looking to have a permanent staff member. As you may know, Don is a contract worker now. I believe he is beginning to look to move on and to the next stage of things, and the consortium feels it's time that they hire a full-time director. They have looked or have asked the county to be that conduit. While it wouldn't be our employee, we would be able to provide the ability for the employee to receive health insurance and New York State retirement, similar to a similar arrangement with Bolton Point and the conduit that the town of Ithaca provides for those employees. That would require some memorandum of agreement or 5G agreement with Tompkins County that would identify we would be that conduit to provide the employee with benefits that they otherwise wouldn't be able to provide. Spoke with Joe about it at the last meeting this week, and at this as it stands now, we're going to continue to have some discussions with the consortium, try to identify an agreement that outlines those terms and conditions, and bring that back for consideration to the legislature. They expect probably over the next 5 years to expand a little bit staff-wise, take some of the billing in-house, where right now we are the ones that provide that billing services through our finance department. And I suspect that over the next 5 years they may add a staff member or two or three, or maybe even up to five. So part of the discussion about the size and nature of the relationship would probably have a threshold, meaning we would revisit the agreement after a few years, and when it gets to a certain size, they would branch off and create their own management association or management organization, which would no longer be affiliated in that sense. But for the time being, this will help them get off the ground for a full-time director, potentially starting January 1. It would not be at a cost to us. Whoever, all costs would be reimbursed to us from the consortium. So that's, you know, one of the things that we'll be working on over the next few months closely with Don and the consortium, and we'll go from there. I think that's really the primary update, but I can answer any questions. Anybody else has any other questions about any other bits?
Does anybody have any questions for Jason? All right, moving to the county attorney.
Two quick things. One, following up on Mike Lane's comments on the need for a new county judge, and he mentioned several new courts. What he didn't mention, and many of you may not know, that would raise the age, there will also be a new youth court. How that will work, we'll find out starting October 1. But that's yet another responsibility of our county judges. I also wanted to mention I've handed out a confidential memorandum on some of our recent litigation. It's only been 2 months since I did it last time, and there's been a lot of changes, a lot of things that have happened in the last couple months. So please feel free to stop and ask if you have any questions. And that's my report.
Thank you, Jonathan. And we have the finance director.
I have no report for tonight other than to announce that the deputy director of finance position is still posted on the county website through the Human Resources Department link, and you can view that there if you know folks who may be interested. We are accepting applications up until the 28th of this month.
How many applications have you gotten so far?
The HR got 11, of which 6 have been qualified and have been sent through to me.
Great. Thank you, Rick. Jonathan. I mean, Jason. Okay. How are you guys?
One thing I'll add is that we did close the COFA director application process. We had 29 applicants that are qualified. The interview panel has reviewed, they take a first ranking of the screening, and we'll be doing some phone interviews of the first 8 or 9 of them with final interviews in the upcoming weeks. So just to bring everybody through that.
Great, thank you. Yeah, Anne.
I'm just wondering for either position or to get some candidates either within the county or local.
We got a few internal candidates as well as a lot of local candidates.
We have both from within the county and without the county.
Unless there's any other questions, I'll move on. So any additions or withdrawals from the agenda? I think there is a withdrawal.
I'd like to withdraw Resolution F, please.
Resolution F. G. I think it's Resolution G.
Oh, G, I'm sorry, yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dave. Resolution G is withdrawn for this evening. So moving on to consent agenda, we have appointments, advisory board appointments. So the advisory board on indigent representation, Robert Lynch, large representative, term expires December 31st, 2019. Tompkins-Cortland Community College Board of Trustees, Arthur Kukas, Tompkins County representative, term expires June 30th, 2025. Development Disabilities Subcommittee, Jeffrey D. Bullis, Community Member Representative, term expires December 31st, 2019. And Personal Emergency Response Service Advisory Board, and that's Matthew Skibal, I think that's how you pronounce it, representative of an agency representing the disabled or elderly police agency, term expires December 31st, 2019. So moving on with the consent agenda, we have the Housing Committee. Resolution A, scheduling a public hearing for the 2018 New York State Homes and Community Renewal Housing Trust Fund Corporation Community Development Block Grant Program application, and that is ID number 8080. Public Safety Committee, we have Resolution B, resolution urging the New York State Legislature to pass Bill A-7653 and S-8709. So that's 7653A. That authorizes the sheriff to assign a transgender or intersex inmate to any facility housing unit, which shall ensure the inmate's health and safety, and that's ID 8070. Resolution C, authorization to accept an award of a grant for the benefit of the Drug Treatment Courts of Tompkins County, Probation and Community Justice Department, ID 8008. From the Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution D.
Pulled.
All right. Resolution D is pulled. From Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Resolution E, award of bid, snow removal equipment, ramp dozer, Ithaca Tompkins Regional Airport. Resolution F, that was ID 8084. And then we have Resolution F, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law number, we don't have a number, of 2018, amending the Tompkins County Charter, Article 11, Air Service Board, and that is ID number 8089. And that is revised as adopted by committee earlier today. And then we have from the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution H, scheduling a public hearing on the 2019 Tompkins County budget and the 2019 to 2023 Tompkins County Capital Program, ID number 8045. Could I have someone move the consent agenda? Deborah, seconded by Ann. All in favor? And that is unanimous. So moving into the standing and special committees, I think that we still have some resolutions that concern the airport. Is that correct? So I think in order to allow people to go home, let's move to facilities and infrastructure first.
Okay. We have Resolution K, authorization to execute an agreement with Town of Ithaca, County Road 119, Cottington Road, Highway Safety Improvements at Burns Road and East King Road intersection, Town of Ithaca, ID 8013. I'll move that.
Do I have a second? Ann? Did you want to talk about this, or did anybody have any questions? If we don't have any questions, then all in favor? Any opposed? And that is unanimous. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Dave. Did you have any other comments for the committee?
Other than my normal report, if you want me to do that now.
Absolutely.
Okay. F and I met earlier this afternoon prior to this meeting, and we discussed, well, first of all, we had a presentation on a Freese Road Bridge project, discussion of four various options that will be voted on eventually by the town board. Highway Department had resolutions for $1.6 million in serial bonds for highway improvements and another one for bridge improvements of $200,000 in serial bonds. And we had several resolutions on the airport, that some of which are on tonight's agenda. Some will be on the next agenda, I believe. And that's my report.
Thank you. And I'm going to move next to Health and Human Services. We've had one resolution pulled, and then we have a second resolution. So we'll do that committee next. Shauna?
Yes, I would like to invite Frank up so that he could explain resolution number D, ID 8058, to us.
Would you like to move it first?
Yes, I would.
I would like to move resolution number D, document ID 8058, acceptance of learning resource grant from Corsage Foundation, authorization to execute contracts and budget adjustment, Public Health Department.
Great. Do I have a seconder? Deborah? And take it away, Frank.
Now it is. Okay, he got me.
So just a quick summary of what this is and how it came about, and then we can open up to questions.
So before I start there, I do want to ask Sam Hilson, who's in the back, to stand up and wave to everybody. Sam is my partner in crime in this particular effort, so everything that we're talking about, she and I are working together with on. So first of all, it is the Kresge Foundation that has given us this opportunity, and they have a program called Emerging Leaders in Public Health. And the Kresge Foundation has seen the erosion of public health workforce over the last decade or so, and they're concerned about that. They're concerned about the privatization of direct services that health departments have traditionally held, as well as the reduction in resources as we've gone through a challenging financial time. So they have created this program. This is the third cohort. It's a competitive process. We are one of 20 health departments across the country that were selected for this particular cohort, and they challenge you to define and explore a new long-term sustainable role for local health departments into the future. And that's really the extent of the guidance that they give, which is one of the unique things about this opportunity, is that they're putting money out there and allowing local health departments to say, this is what we want to explore, and this is where we envision we might be 5 to 10 years down the road, and we need some resources to help us think about this idea, to bring our staff and our communities along on the journey, to have the conversations, and ultimately lead to some transformative change for local health departments. So you'll see in the description that we provided for the grant, Sam and I have kind of gone through many iterations, and this will continue to be an iterative process around what the future might look like. And ultimately where we landed for our application was that we want to be the population health strategist around the issues of social determinants of of health. And more importantly, focusing on how can we maximize our community resources to improve health outcomes by improving areas within social determinants of health. And so that's where we are today. We submitted our application. They accepted us into the program. We have subsequently submitted a budget to the Kresge Foundation for final approval to spend up to $125,000 to move this effort forward. We have split the monies into really three main buckets. The first is this is a leadership program, so a lot of the energy and resources is targeted at Sam and myself to put us in a position to help navigate this transformation and help bring our community together to talk about where we might want to be. So there's monies associated with coaching and a 360 for both of us, as well as convenings with the other members of the cohorts over the next 14 months. There will be three of those, including a trip to the National Association of City and County Health Officials. There's also some monies in there for us to travel to other health departments that have gone through this effort to get some feedback on their experience and see how they were able to achieve what they were working towards. The second bucket is for the department. Because obviously we need to bring along staff to help them understand these ideas about social determinant of health and where we're trying to potentially get to. And so there's some monies for a senior leadership retreat, for senior leadership of both departments. Remember, I do both. And also to have what I'm really excited about is a single all-staff meeting between both departments to talk about these social determinant of health, this transformation effort, and really where we imagine us being into the future. So there's a pot of money that's associated with staff, bringing staff along. And then the third component has to do with the community and engaging not only the Board of Health, the Community Services Board, and the legislature, but also we're looking to partner with the Cornell Cooperative Extension, and we've had some discussions with them, and we put together a little program to use the Natural Leaders Initiative that they've had ongoing, which really brings in non-traditional leaders from the community and gives them some skill and understanding on how to move forward things that they might be interested in seeing happen in their communities. And what we've planned with them is we're going to have three health department staff participate in that Natural Leaders Initiative. These are non-traditional leaders as well. They're not current supervisors. And we're hoping that they will find pairs and matches with some of the community members around issues of interest to them. Maybe it's the geography and where they live. Maybe it's a particular issue that they're concerned about. And then we have some monies for mini grants to potentially seed some ideas that might come out of that work. So our hope is, one, we're going to get some trained folks that are growing into leadership roles. We're going to get some folks with lived experience from our communities to help us understand how community health affects them and their families and their community. And then ultimately, hopefully, they're going to do some good with some small projects over time. So those are kind of the three pots of the money and where we're envisioning this going forward.
Before I open it to question, can you explain to the room what social determinants is and how that differs from the traditional model that you've currently been using?
Sure. So social determinant of health are things that you all have been talking about, things like housing and education and socioeconomic status, the things that affect the long-term health and well-being of a person that aren't necessarily heart disease or asthma or those kind of things. So we know in public health that if we're treating sickness or illness or disease, we're too late, right? Our goal is to prevent those things from happening. And that's really where the social determinants of health come into play. And where we envision our future is that we're at the table and helping to lead conversations for the community around those issues to impact long-term health outcomes. We've traditionally over the years been direct service oriented, and that has really begun to transition. It's transitioned here. The closing of the CHA is kind of an example of a transition away from direct services to privatization. And so we do imagine that may continue, and wanting to make sure that we're able to have a role for the local health department that provides value to the community, so that way we have the infrastructure for those emerging issues that we know are always going to continue to come from a public health perspective.
Thank you. Any questions? Mike and then Dan.
I don't really know if you have the answer to my question. Just what I saw online was the Kresge Foundation tries to focus on cities of less than 125, looks like 1,000 people. I'm curious how you did that as a county health department.
So they actually, for this particular project, they opened it up to all local health departments to apply. Where within our cohort, there's 20 local health departments. We're in a team of five that are doing similar projects, which includes San Diego County. It includes Youngstown, Ohio. It includes Cleveland and a county in Washington State. They're all bigger than us. We are the smallest one in our group. So it is something that Kresge has acknowledged, that local health happens in all shapes and sizes, and they try to acknowledge that. But we are certainly with some heavy hitters out there, which quite honestly adds some benefit because they have a wide array of resources that we don't have access to, which hopefully we're going to be able to learn from and use as we go forward.
Dan?
Thank you. I have a number of questions. In the document, I have some quotes here. This one says, the health department is not perceived as a problem-solving partner for equity, inclusion, and social justice. Can you tell me how that statement was arrived at?
Sure. It really comes from me working with Sam, trying to identify some of the areas that we think we should improve in. I think certainly we do work for problem solving and health equity. All of those things are important to us, but it isn't a focus of anything we do, right? Much of what we do at the health department now is providing service, and certainly we try to do that in an inclusive and an equitable way. But really thinking about and being a part of the conversation around those issues is something we really want to change and put ourselves out there as someone that can be a resource and subject matter experts on trying to address those issues.
Okay, so you said that was your idea. So, I mean, were any advisory boards asked about it? Were any surveys done? Was any data behind any employees involved in the conversation?
No. The Emerging Leaders in Public Health is a leadership program, and their focus is on the team of two people and kind of what their thinking is about moving things forward. Much of what will happen over the next 14 months is to try to engage the staff at the department, the community through our advisory boards, and the community through some of the other outreach that we're going to do. So it is important to understand that what we've said in this initial kind of outlay to the Kresge Foundation is essentially my vision of where I think we have opportunity. Now we've got to go figure out if that is the case, who's on board with that, do we have enough support, and, you know, should we move forward with those things. So we will do much of what you're asking there, Dan, as part of this process over the next 14 months.
In there, it states that the Tompkin County Health Department's new role will be the population health strategist for addressing social determinants of health. It causes me to ask a couple of questions. I guess it's the same question. Like, it's funny to me that it's just declaring a new role, because we haven't been involved in that conversation. But also, it makes me wonder what's wrong with the old role.
So those are really good questions. I'll answer the first one. The Kresge Foundation's purpose for this is transformation, and in order to be a part of the project, a part of the Emerging Leaders in Public Health, and to move forward through the process, they want you to say, this is the role that we see for our department moving forward, and they are talking to the two people that are participating. They want you to have that declarative statement because it gives some clarity to what you're going to do moving forward to try to achieve whether or not you're going to get there. So the reason it is declarative is because the program itself demands it. The second question about what is wrong with what we're doing now, nothing. There will always be a role for providing direct service, but quite honestly, we have been through it here locally, that the local health department is smaller than it was 8 years ago when I got here. We contract out STD services. We're no longer doing home care services. The health home program for children has taken some early intervention work away from the local health departments. So there's continually things that are happening that threaten the status quo. And we can sit steady and continue the status quo and see what happens. But quite honestly, from my perspective, I felt like this was an opportunity where somebody was going to give us some resources to think about what the future might look like and explore whether or not we could get to a future that might be different and might be sustainable long term.
I can only speak for myself, but that sounds like an amazing step forward, and it sounds like adding, not substituting, which I appreciate. And I also wanted to acknowledge, I think, Sam, you were the one who found this and brought it to Frank's attention, so thank you from me and for the community. Any other questions?
I did have more questions, yeah.
Dan?
Another line in here says, an emphasis will be placed on addressing gaps in urban and rural dynamics for receipt of services in the city. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, really what we're talking about there is the fact that much of the human services and social determinant type conversations are centered around the city center, and we want to make sure that the rural communities are a part of our larger discussion about the future of public health. And so how do we make those connections to ensure that those in the rural areas are being served and are having the same chance at those positive health outcomes that we might see where the resources are centered in the city?
Any more questions, Dan?
Yeah. You said that it talks about receiving technical assistance from Cooperative Extension Leadership Initiative, and you said that that's the Natural Leaders Initiative. Yeah. I mean, so I know you explained a little bit, but so Natural Leaders Initiative, I mean, I am familiar with it, is explain to me how the people involved in that program will, because they don't have any expertise in health departments or health policy. I mean, that's not what that program is about at all. So why would they be providing direction?
Sure. So we have talked with the Natural Leaders folks, and they are going to weave community health into the program in this next cohort that they're going to do. But what you just described, Dan, is exactly what we're trying to get. We're trying to get to individuals that are see change in their community that they want to see happen, and we want to be a partner with them to help them understand what expertise we have and can bring to the table for them. And then they bring to us the lived experience that they have. They bring community connections that we might not otherwise have. So what we envision happening with the Natural Leaders Institute is those community members that are participating will hopefully naturally end up paired up with one of the three health department staff that we're sending. So we'll have people that have some technical understanding about what the health department does that can pair up with a community member around a like issue that they have concern about. And then hopefully out of that will come an opportunity for them to apply to us for some small funding to be able to move forward a project or an initiative or build upon something that's already happening that helps us achieve some improvement around social determinants of health, which is a very broad umbrella. So most of anything we can find a connection. But really, in turn, what that builds for us is it builds capacity. Now we do have community members that have been identified as non-traditional leaders that do know a bit about community health and can then hopefully give us some input and feedback into this process as we try to grow forward.
In case you don't, I'm going to move to Leslin unless you have.
Yeah, I did one more thing I wanted to say. Mm-hmm. I'm going to vote against this. I'm a big fan of the health department. I actually feel like the programs we do are amazing. Many of them are non-income based. They're free. I'm sorry, Deborah, is something wrong?
No.
Okay, many of those programs are free, which in my mind is you know, right in there with equity and social justice. I mean, it's hard to get more socially just than that. If we're pivoting to some new role, I would have thought that the legislature would be involved. We are the policy setting body, and the fact that employees weren't involved in this idea, or there was no survey taken, that the advisory boards weren't on, I find that not inclusive, and so For those reasons, I'm not going to support this.
Leslin.
So Dan asked my question around the Natural Leaders Initiative, and I'm not sure I'm even following your response well. I don't need you to repeat it. I just wanted to say that was my main question. And I'm also always interested in hearing how one service gets chosen over another, because there are other leadership opportunities and leadership programs within the county, and for something that's supposed to be about fairness and equity, it just felt a little arbitrary to just choose one. And I don't know if there was a process for engaging others. Perhaps you can share if there was. I appreciate you all going after this grant very much. Dan, although I hear you, I think departments also have the authority to do things that could improve their work without us having to micromanage it. So I don't feel like I needed to be necessarily as involved. I just like to see a process that appears to be open, so everybody has a fair chance.
I like the sounds of the program, so thank you for adding this to what the Department of Health is going to be doing. I think as far as being proactive, I think we owe it to our community. We often, too often, whether it's the legislature, Department of Health, mental health, we often react to issues. So I hope you're also open to, you know, feedback from different legislators in the community, which I believe that you are. And so I'm just going to put in a little bit. It's just to maybe get more feedback of where this, you know, what type of programs that and what type of services that could be offered, especially including different populations. So to be more inclusive. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely. Rich.
Thank you, Anna. Yeah. And thanks for taking the time for the discussion the other day you and I had on this. I think this is a great opportunity. And just for clarity, if you go through this and you have a new policy initiative you want to implement, that would come back to the appropriate committee. This is to think about things. But
yeah, and we're going to put you all to work as part of this, so I don't want anyone to think you're not going to be included. We're going to need the legislature and both boards to be a part of the conversation, and we've actually built that into our facilitation of the conversation. It will likely happen in early 2019, but it will definitely be a part of what we do, so we want to hear from you all.
So once we give all our input, what exactly would we be giving our input on, and what would be the end result that you're looking for from that?
Yeah, so that's a good question. This is an iterative process, and we're learning as we go, right? Think of it as a thinking activity, and so Sam and I are in the very early stages of doing that thinking about how we might move this forward, how we might use the dollars most effectively to achieve the goal of the conversation. We're not transforming the health department in 14 months. That's not going to happen. That's not even the goal of what this is about. It's them giving seed money to kind of start the thinking and begin a process of educating and talking about what might be a future for the local health department, with the expectation that throughout the years you would have to continue beyond the Kresge Foundation monies to make it a reality. So we're efforting that right now, and likely we will bring you all into the conversation. As I said early in 2019, talking about social determinants, talking about where we think the health department fits in on that, and really getting everyone's feedback to help us move the effort forward.
So in summary, this is a grant to do talking and thinking about how we would implement this, and then you'll come back to us.
Yes.
So we're going to do talking.
Talking and thinking.
With their money.
Yeah, with their money, yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
Just got it. All right. Any more questions? All in favor? Any opposed? Two opposed? Oh, okay. That was still a hand up. Okay. It's 12-4 and one against.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, Sean, I think you have one more resolution.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, and can we also move up the screen? Thank you, Mike and Rich.
Okay, I would like to move resolution number J, doc ID 8031, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay reimbursement, Tompkins County Office for the Aging.
Do I have a second? Leslin? Any questions? Ready to vote? All in favor?
Short roll call.
Oh, sorry. This is a short roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Aye.
Ms. Champion?
Any opposed? That is unanimous. Mm-hmm. You have a 30-second minute. And did you have any other final reports, Shauna?
Yeah, the only thing that I have to report is that September 10th, Sally Santangelo from CNY Fair Housing came out and spoke to us about source of income. And our next meeting will be October 9th, which is a change from our Monday meeting. It's actually going to follow on a Tuesday, starting at 4 p.m., and we are going to have a presentation by the Ithaca Free Clinic.
Excellent. Thank you. Moving on to the Housing Committee, we have the Vice Chair, Mike Sigler. Do you have a report?
Hi. Quick report. Do you want to do the – no, we don't have a resolution. So do you want to just do the report quickly? We do have a resolution, all right, scheduling a public hearing for the 2018 New York State Homes and Grants Pardon?
That was on consent.
On consent. All right. So the big report, the big thing we talked about at the housing was the zero energy modular homes. So this group is out of Vermont. They would like to move into New York State, and that's they're negotiating, I think, with NYSERDA, and they're full steam ahead with this with NYSERDA. They say that they can build zero energy modular homes, and these will replace things like mobile homes and some of the modular homes actually that are being built today. I guess the big concern that came out of the whole thing was they thought a median priced home was like $180,000. That was the big pull for me, and I was like, wow, they clearly don't. People live in mobile homes, I think, because they can pay $15,000 and they get the whole thing. I don't know if they'll be able to make the jump to $180,000, but NYSERDA is moving ahead with that. They would like to build homes that don't use any energy. So that's where they are with that. And it was an interesting discussion. They were nice to call us. It was a whole conference call thing. So that's really my whole report.
Great. Thanks. Deborah, did you have any questions or comments?
Well, yeah, I think that I appreciate your concern over the cost of the homes, Mike. I was concerned about that, too. But I think the point of their presentation was that the savings on energy costs and the fact that these zero-energy modular homes are eligible for conventional 30-year financing at a relatively low interest rate versus the chattel mortgages that apply to most current manufactured and mobile homes means that the monthly cost of these homes, even at $180,000 versus $15,000, can be considerably lower, in addition to the difference it makes in energy use. So, yeah, a $180,000 modular home is probably not the answer if you're scraping by on $25,000 a year, but there's probably a market out there for these homes, too.
Ms. Deborah, anyone else from the committee want to add? All right. Public Safety Committee, Rich John, and you have a resolution.
Thank you, Anna. The committee met on September 5th. We had a good meeting, got reports from the various departments. And one big issue we had discussion about is talking to the city of Ithaca about the potential of co-locating the sheriff's department with the Ithaca City Police Department. And that's what the resolution is about. And so maybe I would move that at this point if I could get a second and then talk further.
Do I have a second? Dave?
Thank you. As all of you are aware, we've gone through a pretty extensive examination of our jail, and last year we made some key decisions about alternatives to incarceration. And it looks like at this point we're heading in the right direction in terms of our jail population. But in the course of that study, we determined that the physical plant of the jail and the sheriff's office there are in real need of updating and upgrading. And in particularly in connection with the jail, there's not enough room to run the programming. The nurses' facility is in a converted jail cell. The kitchen facilities are really inadequate. And there aren't meeting rooms to do the various educational and therapeutic programming and assessment programming that needs to happen to make the ATI successful, alternatives to incarceration. So we've been looking at the space, and at the same time, the city of Ithaca is involved in trying to address some serious deficiencies in their building where the Ithaca City Police Department is housed. Last year as well, we looked at the idea of consolidation of police agencies, and we had a outside consultant, CGR, help us with that. And frankly, the outcome there was that consolidation would be a very heavy lift. That would involve combining police agencies. And there didn't seem to be there was much appetite for it because it would be so difficult in terms of combining municipal operations, but also combining union contracts and for other reasons. However, there's real benefit if you could ever do that. If you could ever consolidate police agencies in terms of cost, because you get far more efficient operation and you can share a lot of services. What co-location would do would allow us to think about consolidation 10 or 15 years from now. And that's why it's really important, I believe, to look at co-location as a possibility. It may be something we decide we can't do for various reasons or find it's not the optimal solution. But what this study would do is allow us to start down that pathway and try to determine, is this a viable opportunity or is it something we don't want to do? So I'll stop there and happy to try to answer any questions.
Glenn?
Isn't there a restriction in this that it has to be located within the city limits?
In this study, yes. And the reason for that is that the city of Ithaca would have great difficulty locating their police department outside of the city limits, while, of course, the sheriff is the sheriff for the whole county, including the city. And you're also looking at a location or various locations that would provide better response time to different parts of the county because, of course, we're cut partway through by the lake. But, yes, this study would say the sites we're going to look at would be in the city.
Mike?
I don't think that's a real problem because the city of Ithaca is the county seat of Tompkins County. And for 170 years, the sheriff's department was located next door to this building and operated both the road patrol and their civil and jail from the city of Ithaca. It would be difficult for the city to locate outside of its jurisdiction, but Tompkins County, as Rich just said, is in the jurisdiction. I still remember years ago, I know some folks don't like all my history, but I like to tell it. Quite a few years ago when I was serving as mayor of the village of Dryden and they were building the public safety building, I remember attending the hearings that were held in the chambers over, or the legislative chambers in the main courthouse. And I argued at that time that the jail should stay downtown where it was closest to all the various the police agencies, but otherwise was better for us at the airport, the people at the Dryden Police Agency at the airport. And I strongly remember the mayor of the village of Lansing at that time arguing strenuously that they did not want the public safety building in the village of Lansing. They thought it was not the kind of message that they wanted to have in Lansing. And they thought it should be downtown also. So I think to anybody who thinks that we shouldn't have it in the city, I think there's a lot of reasons that should be looked at as to why administrative offices should be in the city.
Deborah? I'm sorry, Mike first, then Deborah.
So the reason I'm going to be voting against this is exactly the reasons that Mr. Johns and Mr. Lane just said. I believe this vote completely lacks transparency of what the true motive of what you want to do is. I mean, the ultimate goal here is to move the Sheriff's Department to downtown Ithaca. And if that's what you want to do, then fine. That should be the vote. But to say, like, well, we're going to do a study on this, and we're going to come up with these 15 locations, but they're only going to be in the city. I mean, I brought this to my town board, and they didn't understand it either. And it's not like they're all Republicans up there or they're all conservatives. They're, you know, they want to know, why aren't we looking at the NYSEG building, which is almost completely empty for uses like this? And maybe you co-locate TCAT in there, too. But no, we're going to be under the guise that, well, the city, that's where we want this located. So if that's what you want, then just do that. I mean, just vote for that. Instead of this idea of, oh, we're going to do this study, but these are the only locations. Because I can save you $24,000 right now then. I'll tell you where it's going to be. It's going to be over in the industrial park where we have land, or it's going to be over there by Walmart where we have land. Because I don't know where else you're going to put it in downtown Ithaca where, you know, the land is going for, what, $1 million a lot. So I just frankly don't really understand. It's not even the money of the study. The study's what, $24,000. We have to pay $10,000. That's not a whole lot of money. But then if we're going to do a study about where to place our sheriff's department, why don't we place that study? And if we're lacking coverage in Newfield because we don't have that satellite office, which we have, then we should look at that too and say, okay, how do we get better coverage with our sheriff's department on the other side of the lake? But, you know, I look at what the hospital does. Hey, we don't have good medical service or good enough medical service on the Lansing side of the lake, so we're going to open an urgent care. Yeah, that's what you should do, and they did, and now they've extended hours, and now we have great medical service over on the Lansing side of the lake. So, and I don't see anybody saying we should up and move the hospital over to Lansing, even though that's where the growth area is, because that's not where it is. So I don't know. I don't like the idea that this is that we're now going to be beholden to the city, and I don't care that it, you know, some person 30 years ago didn't want it in Lansing. You know, that's not the case now, at least not to any of the people I talk to. So.
I have Deborah, then Rich.
Well, I happen to not be particularly in favor of consolidating the IPD and the sheriff's office.
Co-locating, not consolidating.
No. No, I'm just talking about there's another reason to do this, and it doesn't necessarily have to do with consolidating the two departments, which, like I said, I'm at this point not really much in favor of, but it seemed to me that we're in a situation where we have to figure out how to make room for additional uses in our current facility. And so I viewed this as offering us an opportunity to move our road patrol people out of the current building and therefore making available more space for other uses, and for that reason I would vote for it. But when we get to the consolidation, then I'm going to vote no. So there you go.
Rich.
Yeah, I guess I'd make a plea for maintaining open minds. I understand what you're saying, Mike, but I don't see this as a vote to try to put the sheriff downtown. This is truly a study to see if this is a good idea or not. And if the determination of the study is this is a great idea, it comes back for a vote. There's nothing going to happen without this legislature talking about it and voting further. And I would anticipate there would be extensive discussion about this kind of a move. I'd also add one more thing that because of the moment in time where the city is looking at this and the county is looking at it, if we don't study it now, those two issues are not going to align at the same time, probably in our lifetimes again. So I feel we have some obligation to really give it a fair look, but not to say we're prejudging this, but we need to look at it, and that's what the study is doing. It's not making any decision.
So one thing I just wanted to add from my discussions with TCAD, as you know, they present to PDEC. They did actually look at that facility, and that is not an option. So just so you know. And I want to emphasize, at least from my point, what Rich was saying, and I appreciate, there is, I think, a sentiment that there is this desire by the city to hoard everything in the city, and why should that be? If we step back and look at just the physical layout of the county, split in the middle by a long north to south lake, the one place where you could get to every point in the county the fastest would be at the bottom of the lake, where you can go up northeast side, northwest side, down south in every direction. So, as you said, it's worth studying. I don't think this is any sort of commitment, but understanding, as you said, there might only be two locations in the city. Well, then if that's it, great. We know them. We can add them to the pile. And if we're not ready to commit, we can do another study and look at what's out there in the county. And then we can add that to the list, have a full list, and then we'd have information. If we have an opportunity to get a piece of the information and the city's willing to pay for part of it, well, heck, why don't we take them up on it, we get that information, and we add some more. So I don't think that this is a final commitment, and I don't understand the lack of transparency, but I just wanted to throw that into the mix. And I know, Mike, you had also a response.
The lack of transparency refers to the fact that, from what Mike and Rich said, was that, you know, the ultimate goal is to consolidate. So that's the lack of transparency I'm talking about. But let me put this out there, too. If you do a study on, God, I don't know, favorite flavor of ice cream, and you give it to 1,000 people, but you only give them vanilla ice cream, pretty sure most people are going to like vanilla ice cream. So that's kind of what we're doing here. So just something to keep in mind when we talk about studies, if you're going to put confines on what you're actually studying.
I hear you. And just one clarification, though, one correction. The study from CGR, their recommendation was not consolidation. So to say that our ultimate goal is consolidation is actually inaccurate. So just to correct the record, Rich.
And I would just say, for clarity, my position is I'm not ready to vote on a consolidation proposal. It's not on the floor. I think everything I've read would be consolidation would be incredibly hard, and it might not be the best solution for the various municipalities involved. I think that's an entirely different question, and I did not intend to suggest that's where I thought we should be going.
Any other questions, comments? Shauna?
I guess I'm wondering, as far as the study's concerned, I understand that we want, or they're asking that home base is in the city of Ithaca, but I would also wonder if they would make a reference to satellite locations, because I mean, I think if we're honest with each other, if we do locate it here in the city, it could take 45 minutes on a bad day of traffic to get to Dryden, or, you know, 30 minutes to get to Trumansburg. And I just, I think that could really change the dynamics and the response time whenever we have true emergencies. So I don't know if that could be a question, but I think, you know, if there was some kind of conversation about satellite locations, that would be helpful.
I would anticipate they're not part of the scope of what we're asking the consultants to do in this study. I would almost certainly expect, if this study said, yes, it's worth going further, that we'd be talking about satellite locations. Because you're right. Yeah. But not yet.
There aren't any other comments or questions? This is a short roll call.
Ms. Dawson?
Aye.
Ms. Champion?
Yes.
All opposed? We have two opposed. So 11 in favor and two opposed. That passes. Did you have any other comments or report from the committee?
No. Thank you.
Absolutely. Moving on to Transportation Committee, Mike Lane.
The Transportation Committee met on September 7th. We talked about a number of things. We had an update on the report of the Dryden Rail Trail from Bob Beck. They're making substantial progress there. They are trying to figure a way to cross Route 13 with a tunnel or a bridge or a way around it. All up in the air exactly what, well, some not up in the air, some down underneath. But trying to figure out how to get across there safely for people using the trail. The section from Dryden to Freeville is already open. We spent some time talking about Route 13, particularly the section in the NYSEG area to Dryden, the idea of trying to protect that road in the future through a study that would be able to look at access management along that. In other words, driveways. Perhaps you have access roads and not a driveway at every business or two. It would take some money. There isn't presently any money to do that. But if we're going to kickstart this, it's something that I, for one, think the county ought to be willing to put some money into. And when it comes to the budget, I'd probably be making a proposal about that. We had Nels Bone from the city of Ithaca come in and talk to us about the city's build planning grant application for redesign of Route 13 in the area from Stewart Park to where it was going south. The idea, if they can get this grant that they're trying to have, it would improve the visual impact of that area as an entrance to the city. It would add amenities for more pedestrian and bicycle-friendly areas, safety improvements, and other things along that. Whether they get the grant or not is up in the air, but it was kind of an interesting discussion that they gave us. We talked a little bit about the issues with the bus terminal closing, it's going to be relocated apparently to Green Street with the loss of parking spaces on Green Street having to do with the library that are supposed to be then shifted to
Cayuga
Street. I was thinking of Aurora. And unfortunately, even if they do that and they do protect three or four spaces for the library on Cayuga Street, that's still a net loss of parking spaces that could be used by library patrons and are heavily used by library patrons. So those are some of the highlights of what we talked about.
Thank you. So we have four more committees, and then we have quite an extensive executive session, so I'm just going to call a five-minute break. All right, everybody, we're moving into Government Operations Committee report. We have half the chamber here.
Mm-hmm. I can stall for time.
We can count slowly to five.
We have eight.
There we go. I know, we threw you with the party in the middle, but.
That was nice.
You are so welcome.
Mail because y'all interrupted people in legislature watching time.
Leslyn, you're worth it. Happy birthday.
I'm the one getting the hate mail.
Not hate mail. You got love mail tonight.
We've set the bar for birthdays, though, so we can't go below that for anybody.
Dan Klein, Government Operations Committee report.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
Government Operations Committee met yesterday, and there are a few things I would like to update people about. One is that we passed a resolution
raising the income limit for property tax exemptions for persons with disabilities and limited incomes and for seniors with limited incomes. So just to be clear, that's two categories, disabilities and limited incomes, seniors with limited incomes. So that resolution is going to come to the full legislature. And just so you know in advance, you can be thinking about this, it will result in a $3.12 increase in the tax bill to a median-priced home. Because when you give an exemption to somebody, somebody else has to pay for it. Also from assessment, I've been mentioning how we've been moving towards suspending the local Board of Assessment Reviews for 1 year as an experiment, and we passed a resolution to go ahead and do that. It requires a charter change. It's a simple charter change. It changes one word from shall to may. But because it's a charter change, we have to have a public hearing. That public hearing was set for December 4th. We discussed NACO membership. That is the National Association of Counties. We are not currently a member. We have been a member in the past. No action was taken. There did not seem to be a lot of interest from committee members. However, we did decide to gather a little more information and at least stay open to the idea. And then the final thing was the website refresh that we've been working on for quite a while. And we didn't vote on it. It's not really resolution worthy, but we did get we'd have consensus from the committee that the changes that information technology has suggesting are basically the way to go. I would characterize them as visual and navigation changes for the most part. So they're hard to describe. I'll just mention one. When you go to the home page, you will see in the new version, you will see three columns, the news column, upcoming meetings column, and the quick links column. Now, those are already on our home page, but they're just tabs. Now you'll see a much more filled out list of those things. Another change is that there will be links to all departments on every page. And like I said, there's more changes, but they're hard to describe. It will be a month or so until these changes are implemented. And I want to thank everyone involved. This is kind of a long process. We've got a lot of input from the staff, from legislators, from the Public Information Advisory Board, and from Government Operations Committee. And our next meeting is Wednesday, October 17th at 9:30. That is my report.
Great. Thank you, Dan. And I will give a very brief Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee report. The next meeting is this coming Monday from 3 to 5 p.m. And we have a very packed agenda. The date of that meeting is the 24th. Monday the 24th. We have four significant presentations. They will probably only get 10 to 15 minutes each. The next couple months are going to be very packed because of things that have been brought, so we're doing a lot of shuffling. But because they are important and some of them are timely, we've packed them all into this agenda. So one of them is from TCAT, and they're doing a presentation on their first mile, last mile pilot. As a lot of you know, one of the things that Tompkins County Area Transit, or TCAT, has been wrestling with is how to reach people in the ends of the lines while still maximizing their ridership and the efficiency of the lines that they have. So there are programs throughout the country called First Mile, Last Mile, and they are going to present their pilot program that they will be designing and launching. We also have presentations from CCE. We have two presentations. One is on small to medium scale wind feasibilities projects or windmills. A second one is Tompkins County plastic bag ban proposal. This is actually not from CCE. This is from the EMC. One of our colleagues who had to leave early this evening, she's not feeling well, Amanda Champion, has been leading a subcommittee, a zero-waste subcommittee of the EMC, and will be presenting that proposal, resolution presentation that they have for that proposal. And finally, we also have an agriculture and horticulture tourism presentation And actually, the last one is a presentation from Cornell on their North Campus. So that one, I think, will probably be the most significant to community members. And they have another opportunity to describe to us and explain the particular reason why they chose the system that they did and the energy efficiency measures that they've taken into consideration with that project. So that, again, will be Monday the 24th at 3 p.m., and that's my report. Dan?
I just want to make sure the TCAT last mile, first mile, last mile pilot that you talked about, that's for Dryden, is that correct? Is that what you understood?
That's my understanding.
I just want to make sure everyone knew that. That's planned for Dryden.
Yep. And that's where they're starting the pilot with the intention of ultimately, if it works, expanding it. Right. Thank you. So moving on to Budget, Capital, and Personal Committee, Mike Lane.
This time of year, you folks are probably tired of hearing from the Budget Committee. It's when we are the most active. We've had three expanded Budget Committee sessions. Having presentation for departments. We have two more scheduled. The next one will be on September 27th. I really want to say thank you to everybody for their wonderful participation so far in these groups. It's really heartening when the departments come in that almost all of us are here at each of those meetings. So thank you for that. A couple other things the regular Budget Committee is doing is that we are going to do some interviews for the other and open seat to fill the vacancy on the TC3 Board of Trustees. And we have, at this point, four applicants, and we've scheduled some interviews with those, and we will be making a recommendation to this board shortly. The other thing, we're still working on the direct report process to review them, and we have had a couple of extra meetings to review the survey that everybody participated in. We will be scheduling four separate meetings with the four direct reports. Remember, that is the county administrator, the director of finance, the county attorney, and the the legislature clerk. And we'll be talking with them. We'll be sending out something to them ahead of time, explaining the process. We'll be asking them for their goals, for example. And at the special request of our chair of the legislature, we will be giving each of you the opportunity to weigh in if there are any particular goals you'd like us to discuss. The meetings will be scheduled with the basic Budget Committee. However, they will be open, of course, just like any other meeting, to other members of the legislature who would like to attend. They will be held in executive session, of course. That's pretty much what I have. Any questions I can answer for anyone?
Ann?
Can you let us know the dates and times that you'll be doing that?
Yes, absolutely. But we haven't got them scheduled yet. Michelle's been working overtime trying to figure out all the scheduling for us.
Thank you, Michelle. Unless there's any other questions, moving on to Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee.
WDIC will meet next Wednesday. I think it's the 26th. And I will not be here, and lovely Anna Kellis with trick candles will be cheering.
I won't keep bringing
her down the old jail.
Deal. Deal. All right, then that is our last committee report. Moving on to the minutes of September 4th. Can I have someone move them? Shauna, seconded by Deborah. All in favor? That is, a unanimous support. Anybody opposed to the minutes or any comments? None. That is 12. And unless there are any other complaints about the evening's festivities, I would like to move us into executive session. Can I have someone move? Anne, second. We have already said the purpose in the beginning was for real estate negotiations and labor negotiations. Deborah is seconding. All in favor? We are officially moving into executive session. Thank you, everyone. No action expected.